Chapter 32. Saul Friedman fidgeted impatiently. In his eagerness, he had arrived half an hour before visiting time began, and for this he was doing penance in the bleak little waiting room of Gray's Hospital. He sat forward on the straight-backed chair, twisted his helmet between his fingers, and stared at the large sign on the opposite wall. Gentlemen are requested not to smoke. He had asked Ruth to come with him, but she had pleaded a headache. In a sneaking fashion, Saul was glad. He knew that her presence would inhibit his reunion with Sean Courtney. He didn't want polite conversation about the weather, and how was he feeling now, and he must come round to dinner some evening and all that. It would have been difficult not to be able to swear, if they wanted. It would have been even more difficult in view of Ruth's attitude. Yesterday, the first day of his leave, he had spoken of Sean with enthusiasm. How many times had she visited him? How was he? Did he limp badly? Didn't Ruth think he was a wonderful person? Twice she replied, and, well, not so badly. Yes, yeah, he was very nice. Just about then Saul perceived the truth. Ruth did not like Sean. At first he could hardly believe it. He tried to continue the conversation, but each of her monosyllabic replies confirmed his first suspicion. Of course she had not said so, but it was so obvious. For some reason she had taken a dislike to Sean which was close to loathing. Now Saul sat and pondered the reason. He discounted the possibility that Sean had offended her. If that were the case, Sean would have received as good as he gave, and afterwards Ruth would have related the whole tale with glee and relish. No, Saul decided. It was something else. Like a swimmer about to dive into icy water, Saul drew a metaphorical deep breath and plunged into the uncharted sea of feminine thought processes. Was Sean's masculinity so overpowering as to be offensive? Had his attention to her been below average, Ruth was accustomed to extravagant reactions to her beauty. Could it be that? Or, on the other hand, did Sean... Saul was floundering heavily, when suddenly, as a shipwrecked victim surfacing for the last time finds a tall ship close alongside with lifeboats being lowered from every derrick, the solution came to him. Ruth was jealous. Saul leaned back in the chair, astounded at the depth of his own perception. His lovely, hot-tempered wife was jealous of the friendship between Sean and himself. Chuckling tenderly, Saul laid plans to appease Ruth. He'd have to be less fulsome in his praises of Sean. He must get them together, and in Sean's presence pay special attention to Ruth. He must... Then his thoughts ricocheted off in another direction, and he began to think about Ruth. As always, when he thought too intensely about her, he experienced a feeling of bemusement, similar to what a poor man feels on winning a large lottery. He had met her at the Johannesburg Turf Club during the big summer meeting, and he had fallen in love at a range of 50 paces, so that when he was presented to her, his usually nimble tongue lay like a lump of heavy metal in his mouth, and he squirmed and was silent. The friendly smile she bestowed upon him licked across his face like a blowtorch, heating it until he felt the skin would blister. That night, alone in his lodging, he planned his campaign. To its conduct, he allocated the sum of 500 guineas, which was exactly half his savings. The following morning, he began his intelligence work, and a week later he had collected a massive volume of information. She was 18 years old, and was on a visit to relations in Johannesburg, a visit scheduled to last a further 6 weeks. She came from a rich Natal family of brewers and hotel keepers, but she was an orphan and a ward of her uncle. While in Johannesburg, she rode every day, visited the theatre, or danced every night, with an assortment of escorts, except Fridays, when she attended the old synagogue in Jeffy Street. His opening manoeuvre was the hire of a horse, and he waylaid her as she rode out with her cousin. She did not remember him, and would have ridden on. But at last his tongue, which was sharpened by 3 years of practice at the Johannesburg bar, came to life. Within 2 minutes she was laughing, and an hour later she invited him back to tea with her relatives. The following evening he called for her in a splendid carriage, and they dined at Candy's Hotel, and went on to the ballet in company with a party of Saul's friends. 2 nights later she went with him to the Bar Association ball, and found that he was a superb dancer. Resplendent in his brand-new evening dress, with an ugly yet mobile and expressive face, an inch taller than her 5 feet 6, With wit and intelligence that had earned him a wide circle of friends, he was the perfect foil for her own beauty. When he returned her home, Ruth had a thoughtful but dreamy look in her eye. The following day she attended court, and listened to him successfully defend a gentleman accused of assault with intent to do grievous bodily harm. She was impressed by his display, and decided that, in time, he would reach the heights of his profession. A week later, Saul again proved his command of the spoken word in an impassioned declaration of love. His suit was judged and found worthy, and after that it was merely a case of informing the families and sending out the invitations. Now at last, 4 years later, they were to have their first child. Saul grinned happily as he thought about it. Tomorrow he would begin his attempt to discourage the adoption of the name Storm. It would be a difficult case to win, one worthy of his talents. In the preceding 4 years, Saul had learned that once Ruth set her small white teeth into something, she had a bulldog grip. A great deal of finesse was needed to loosen that grip without invoking her wrath. Saul had an awesome respect for his wife's wrath. "It's 4 o'clock," the little blonde nurse poked her head around the waiting room door and smiled at him. "You may go in now. You'll find him out on the veranda." Saul's eagerness returned in full flood, and he had to restrain himself from bouncing too boisterously down the veranda. He recognized Sean's bulk, clad in uniform khaki, reclining elegantly in a cane-backed chair and chatting to the men in a row of beds in front of him. He came up behind the chair. "Don't stand up, Sergeant. Just toss me a salute from where you are." "Saul," lugging himself out of the chair and pivoting easily on his game leg, Sean gripped both Saul's shoulders in the old show of affection. The pleasure that fired Sean's expression was genuine, and that was enough for Saul. "Good to see you, old bastard," he returned Sean's grip, grinning happily. He did not notice how swiftly Sean's pleasure faded and was replaced by a shifty, nervous smile. "Have a drink." They were the first words that came into Sean's mind. He must have time to feel his way. Had Ruth said anything to Saul? Had he guessed? "Water?" Saul grimaced. "Gin," whispered Sean, guilt making him garrulous, and he went on in a clumsy attempt at humour. "Water carafe is full of gin. For God's sake, don't tell Matron. I smuggle it in. Argue with the nurse whenever she tries to change it. She says, water stale must change. I say, like stale water, raised on stale water. Stale water strongly indicated in all cases of leg injury." "That would give me stale water too," laughed Saul. While he poured, Sean introduced Saul to the gentleman in the next bed, a Scotsman who agreed with them that stale water was a sovereign therapeutic for shrapnel wound in the chest, a complaint from which he was currently suffering. The three of them settled down to a course of intensive treatment. At Sean's prodding, Saul embarked on a long account of the Battle of Spion Kop. He made it seem very funny. Then he went on to describe the final breakthrough at Hlangwani, Buller's eventual relief of Ladysmith, and his cautious pursuit of Larue's army, which was now in full retreat into the Transvaal. They discussed Lord Robert's offensive that had driven him up from the Cape, relieved Kimberley, swept on to take Bloemfontein, and was now poised for the final thrust through the belly of the Transvaal to Pretoria, which was the heart. "Ugh, it'll be over in 3 months," the Scotsman gave his opinion. "Hey, you think so?" Sean sneered at him a little, and succeeded in provoking an argument whose flames were fed with gin. As the level in the carafe fell, the time for sober and serious discussion passed, and they became sentimental. Tenderly, Saul inquired after his injuries. The Scotsman was being shipped home across the sea, and at the thought of parting they became sad. Sean was returning the following day to Ladyburg for convalescent leave, at the end of which, if the doctors were satisfied that the pieces of shrapnel in his leg were satisfactorily incised, two words which Sean had difficulty enunciating under the circumstances, he would be returned to duty. The word duty aroused their patriotism, and Sean and Saul, with arms around each other's shoulders, swore a mighty oath that together, comrades in arms, brothers in blood, they would see this war out. Never counting the cost in hardship and danger, together they would ride against the foe. Suitable music was needed for their mood, and the Scotsman gave them the Wild Colonial Boy. His eyes were moist and his voice quavered with emotion. Deeply touching, but not entirely appropriate to the occasion, Sean and Saul did Hearts of Oak as a duet. Then all three launched into a lively rendition of Are You Awake, Johnny Cope? The matron arrived in the middle of the third chorus, by which time Johnny Cope and anybody else within 100 yards could not possibly have been sleeping. "Gentlemen, a visiting hour ended at 5 o'clock." She was a fearsome woman with a voice like a cavalry charge. But Saul, who had pleaded before hanging judges, rose undaunted to the defence. "Madam," he opened his address with a bow, "these men, nay, let me speak with truth, these heroes have made great sacrifice in the name of freedom. Their blood has flowed like gin in defence of that glorious ideal, freedom. All I ask is that a little of that precious stuff be granted unto them, madam. Madam, madam, in the name of honour, of fairness, and of gratitude, I appeal to you." He ended with one fist clenched above his heart and his head tragically bowed. "Oh, Hootsman! Oh, good, very good!" The two heroes burst into spontaneous and heartwarming applause, but over the matron's features descended a frosty veil of suspicion. She elevated her nose a little and sniffed. "You're drunk," she accused grimly. "Oh, foul libel! Oh, monstrous untruth!" Saul backed hurriedly out of rage. "All right, Sergeant," she turned grimly on Sean. "Where is it?" "What?" Sean was all helpless innocence. "The bottle?" She lifted the bedclothes and began her search. Saul picked up his helmet, saluted them behind her back, and tiptoed down the veranda.